Welcome to your KMUD Weekend News. I'm April Lewis, reporting from our studios here in Southern Humboldt. For this weekend, we have a series of in-depth stories from our news team. We'll be covering a variety of topics, including a staffing crisis in Mendocino, the Arcata City Council moving to approve cannabis lounges, poverty and decreasing enrollment impacting local schools, and later in the broadcast, Ray Hamill has this week's sports report. First, a quick update on the situation in the Middle East. Iran announced on Friday that it would fully open the Strait of Hormuz for the duration of the current ceasefire. Stocks rose sharply and oil prices plummeted in response to the announcement. The Brent crude index was down to $92 per barrel as of press time on Friday afternoon, representing an 8% decrease over the previous day. Oil prices per barrel were around $72 the day before the war started on February 27th. Stocks soared, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average closing at 49,448 points Friday afternoon. If the ceasefire holds and the strait remains open, consumers should soon see lower prices at the pump than at the height of the conflict. In Humboldt news, the Arcata City Council unanimously approved a pathway for cannabis consumption lounges on Wednesday. Here's edited audio, including the council approving the new ordinance and remarks from representatives of Pacific Paradise, a cannabis dispensary in Arcata interested in opening a consumption lounge.
Introducing Ordinance Number 1586, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arcata, amending the Arcata Municipal Code relating to cannabis consumption lounge permit standards and restrictions. May I have a staff report from Community Development Director David Loya?
Yeah, good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm here with a member of my staff, Mari Pepper, who's an assistant planner with us, she'll be giving the principal staff report on the ordinance number 1586.
So I guess I'll just dive right into it. The purpose of this ordinance would be to amend the municipal code to clarify the city's authority to permit cannabis consumption lounges subject to the approval of a use permit, which would update the smoking restrictions, definitions, and exemptions consistent with state law. The amendments also clarify the city's authority to permit temporary cannabis consumption at special events through a special events permit, consistent with state licensing requirements and local approval processes. A little background, in 2016, the Medical Marijuana Innovation Combining Zone was created, which allowed commercial cultivation, manufacturing, distribution, and retail sales cannabis. In 2018, the Arcata Land Use Code was amended, creating a permitting pathway for cannabis consumption lounges, but the municipal code updates were deferred pending evaluation of local intent. This ordinance establishes standards by defining cannabis consumption lounge consistently throughout the municipal code. It limits cannabis consumption lounges to areas in or attached to licensed retail or micro businesses not visible from any public space. It requires that on-site consumption be expressly authorized by the city, and it aligns local smoking restriction exceptions with state law. The California Business and Professions Code authorizes local jurisdictions to permit on-site smoking, vaporizing, or ingestion of cannabis. Several nearby jurisdictions allow cannabis consumption lounges, reflecting a growing trend among local governments. Some of these include Eureka, Ukiah, San Francisco, Sacramento, and Santa Cruz. There are two local businesses, one existing operator and one prospective applicant, which have expressed interest in on-site cannabis consumption authorization. Currently, Humboldt Premium allows consumption via ointments, tinctures, edibles, or drinks, but they are not permitted to ingest cannabis through smoking or vaporizing. Amendments would also allow temporary on-site consumption at events such as cannabis.
And yeah, I think with that, if there are folks in the audience that want to comment on this, we'd encourage Great. That.
Good evening. My name is Michael Betancourt. I am one of the partners in Pacific Paradise, one of the interested parties referenced earlier. And I, too, want to voice support for this ordinance. I do believe it would provide a safe space. I think it would actually indirectly put heads in beds, which we want to draw tourism into the city. I think it would give our three customer segments, each of whom are regularly asking for a place to consume, the opportunity to do that, because right now it doesn't exist in the city. So what we're hearing is that customers are actually leaving the city and staying elsewhere where they have access to lounges. So for all those reasons, I would urge you to vote to adopt this ordinance.
Good evening, council members. I am Jennifer Henson with Pacific Paradise, and I'm here to discuss tonight why I feel there is a need for consumption space. For me, it's about safe access and a safe space. The majority of our Arcata community lives in dorms at Cal Poly, living in apartments, either renting a room in a house or rentals. These all come with strict no smoking rules where one can be evicted from their living space. So allow us to create a place where people can meet up with friends before taking in a movie at the Minor, a few doors down, taking in a show over at Humbrews, and I have yet to mention the tourist. They are usually in hotels and often ask me personally, where can I smoke this? We have no real answers for them. We usually point them towards the alley and suggest that they keep a low profile. How about instead we offer a place where they can have a bit of a tasting like they do in Napa? We would be able to offer nothing but local flower that they could set up as a tasting as they get to do in Napa. So the possibilities are endless when including tourism, but a safe space is much needed for our community. So I appreciate you hearing me out. Thank you.
I would then move to introduce Ordinance Number 1586, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arcata amending the Arcata Municipal Code relating to cannabis consumption lounge permits, standards, and restrictions, and to consent to read by title only.
So we have a motion from Councilmember Matthews and a second from Councilmember Schaefer. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And I say aye, so the motion passes.
The code amendments were passed unanimously by the Arcata Council. We'll continue to track this story, as the ordinance will need to pass another vote to become city code. Mendocino County's efforts to deal with a budget shortfall are producing what union representatives are calling a staffing crisis. Elise Cox has the story.
Less than a year ago, Mendocino County offered its employees up to $25,000 each to voluntarily resign, a move aimed at closing a growing budget gap. Since then, workers have continued to leave. Now, union leaders say the county is facing an acute staffing crisis. Speaking before the Board of Supervisors last week, Akish Edie, Mendocino County Chapter President of SEIU 1021, laid out the numbers.
During the term of the current SEIU contract, which was effective July 1st, 2023, there is a net difference in full-time equivalent employees of 124.15. That translates to a net loss of 4,966 work hours every week. For all of 2025 and to date in 2026, 185 SEIU represented employees left the county's employ. 103 left for personal reasons, that is, reasons not related to work or operational decisions. 62 separated due to work or operational decisions. 18 left for an unknown reason, and 2 died. So, as of today, county staff are operating every week with an additional 4,966 hours of workload because of staff deficit. And I can make this claim because of one very final important number not yet mentioned, and that number is zero. And for the in context, zero is the percentage decrease in the workload staff have experienced since July 1st of 2023. And now they're doing it with 124.15 fewer helpers.
Edie's comments come as contract negotiations between the county and the union continue, with the current agreement set to expire at the end of June. Union representatives say the problem is straightforward. Wages haven't kept pace with the cost of living. Staffers are leaving Mendocino County for better pay. SEIU Representative Patrick Hickey told supervisors that despite negotiated raises, county salaries remain years behind inflation.
County employees are struggling. Groceries, gas, housing, healthcare are all going up faster than salaries. We're all suffering from the affordability crisis. Let's talk about salaries. In the last round of negotiations, employees were brought up to the market rate for 2023. So we're 3 years behind. Inflation has chipped away at their pay as prices rise.
Nearly every department is feeling the impact. Nathan Maxman, who works in the assessor's office, spoke up after an outside consultant presented a comparative wage study to the Board of Supervisors last month. The study found that Mendocino County's employee compensation sits roughly 5.5% below the regional market average, but remains significantly above its most direct rural peers. Maxman said the study was misleading.
Looking at the presentation before the meeting, it really looked like finding numbers to fit what you wanted to say. It doesn't take geography into reality. I mean, when they're taking the smaller comparator group, they don't put Sonoma County and Santa Rosa with us. They exclude those and show us the counties that are further away. Just in our office, we've lost appraisers to Sonoma County, Solano County, and Marin County. So we're not comparing to those where people are actually going. We're comparing to places people aren't going.
As a result of the exodus in human services, staffing has dropped by more than 50 positions over the past 2 years, a shift the department head says is leading to burnout and overload. Health Services Director Dr. Janine Miller recently asked the board to approve 18 new hires, warning that without them, the county could face fines or sanctions from the state. In the public defender's office, staffing remains short by 5 attorneys as new hires continue to be offset by departures. At the sheriff's office, officials report they're weeks behind in filling key positions. And in planning and building, thin staffing at the counter is already affecting service to residents, the department head said. And beyond staffing, there may be financial consequences. Dr. Miller noted that the vacancies in her department, which have added up to $4.3 million in savings, can also be seen as lost revenue.
And I'm just going to point out that also means $4.3 million in revenue that you've left on the table, because all of what we do is revenue that we bring in through grant, state, federal funding, and Medi-Cal dollars. And so when we are not staffing our positions, we are leaving money on the table for this county.
As contract talks continue, union representatives are urging the Board of Supervisors to be realistic about what programs and services the county can afford. Here's Patrick Hickey again.
We urge the board to focus on what employees need to support themselves and their families. Staff at a level that allows you to pay living wages. Clearly spell out what the county can afford to do and what it can't. The board needs to be clear on what activities and services will be eliminated or put on hold.
For KMUD News and MendoLocal.News, I'm Elise Cox.
Yellow to yellow in the light. Black to black.
Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors has been updated on the state of local education and the challenges it's facing. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools has told the Board of Supervisors that the majority of public school students live in poverty and declining enrollment undermines staffing and sustainability. County Superintendent of Schools Michael Davies Hughes updated supervisors on the strength and challenges of the school system at their April 14th meeting. Davies Hughes said, quote, "A major lens for everything that we do in schools is socioeconomic need." And he added that a significant factor is the 60% poverty rate among families of students. But he highlighted some successes, including the county's 92% high school graduation rate, which is higher than the state rate of 87.5%. Declining enrollment, however, is an ongoing challenge because state funding is based on average daily attendance.
Even with those successes, we're facing a major system pressure, and that is declining student enrollment. Our schools are primarily funded on average daily attendance, or ADA, or in layman's terms, butts in seats. So in Humboldt County, our enrollment has been declining since late 1990s. And interestingly, our student enrollment in 2026 is about the same as it was 45 years ago in 1981. So if we have less students attending, then we have less funds to support our schools, which has implications for staffing stability and program offerings and long-term stability. And unfortunately, our declining enrollment has recently resulted in the closure of 2 schools. Greenpoint Elementary District closed in June after over 100 years in operation. And most recently, this past February, Agnes J. Johnson Charter School had to close mid-year, which has a huge impact on students and families.
Davies Hughes added that charter school attendance is increasing, but overall attendance is still in decline. Absenteeism is also concerning.
So beyond enrollments, we're navigating some other challenges that directly affect learning conditions. The first is chronic absenteeism. So this is the percentage of students that miss 10 or more school days in a year. And that number is high, so 25.5%, so over a quarter of our students are chronically absent, compared with 19.4 statewide. That's lost instructional time and a signal that students and families need stronger support. Second, we serve a higher percentage of students with disabilities, 17.5% compared with 13% statewide. That means we need staffing, expertise, and consistent services that are hard to maintain in a rural setting. Third, the need for mental health supports is increasing. We've seen that across the board. And schools are often the place where students and families show up first. And finally, recruitment and retention remains a critical constraint. Teachers and administrators are hard to hire and even harder to keep without the right conditions and supports.
Some opportunities are opening up as well. Davies Hughes described AI as, quote, a practical tool to help educators work smarter, personalize learning, and improve operations if we implement it responsibly and with training. He added that career and technical education is expanding. Supervisor Michelle Bushnell noted the closure of the Agnes J. Johnson Charter School in Wyatt and said the decline of Southern Humboldt's cannabis industry has impacted local schools.
Especially in the Southern Humboldt area where we've seen the cannabis culture really decline, we've seen a lot of folks move in the school. The schools are really impacted by that, and it's been a painful process for that community to realize that those little niche areas where they had a lot of financial support and a lot of attendance or ADA just isn't happening any longer. And it's a process to close a school, and the support that your organization gives is so important in navigating that and to try to relocate those children and their families to a different school district in that same area.
Asked about potential transportation to school challenges, Davies Hughes said some students attend through inter-district transfer agreements. He said school transportation may not be provided to families living outside of district boundaries, and if they're among the 60% in poverty, quote, they're going to have some transportation challenges that other families may not. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Up next, here's the always energetic Ray Hamill with this week's sports report.
The South Fork Cubs are building momentum on the softball fields as they get set for a pivotal doubleheader against their main conference rivals this spring. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the impressive Cubs in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest local high school baseball and softball updates, some college baseball and softball news, where three local MVPs will continue their playing careers after graduation later this year, and why this weekend will be a big one for some local high school swimmers. But first up, it's been a good spring so far for the South Fork softball team as the Cubs get set for what could be a conference-deciding doubleheader on Tuesday. This past week, the South Fork girls stretched their winning streak to 6 straight games with 3 more wins on Tuesday and Wednesday. Head coach Lisa Todd and her players welcomed Ferndale to Miranda for a Little Four doubleheader on Tuesday and swept both games, winning a pair of close contests by scores of 5-3 and 5-4. Those two wins lifted the defending Little Four champions to 5-1 in conference play halfway through their L4 schedule, and they would improve to 10-7 overall with a 16-4 non-conference win at Willits the following day. The Hoopa girls also swept a conference doubleheader on Tuesday, taking two games games from St. Bernard's, including a thrilling 16-15 win in 8 innings, in a game in which they trailed by 10 going into the bottom of the 6th. The Warriors are also 5-1 in conference play as they get set to travel to South Fork for a key doubleheader next Tuesday that could very well decide this year's Little Four Championship. In Little Four baseball, meanwhile, St. Bernard's continued to roll this week with a pair of victories over Hoopa. The unbeaten Crusaders travelled to Hoopa on Tuesday and won 15-0 in 5 innings, and they followed that with a second win over the Warriors in Eureka on Thursday afternoon to go to 6-0 in conference play halfway through the Little Four schedule and 14-0 overall. The Ferndale boys kept pace with the Crusaders with a pair of victories over South Fork this week to keep their title hopes alive. The Cats, who dropped 2 games against St. Bernard's in the opening week of conference play, have won 3 straight since then, including a 16-11 win in Miranda on Tuesday afternoon. The Ferndale boys will likely have to sweep 2 games against St. Bernard's next week to have a chance at winning this year's conference title. In Big 5 baseball, it was a good week for the McKinleyville boys. The Panthers swept a doubleheader against Eureka at McKinleyville High School on Monday, knocking off a team that many people believe will be their biggest challengers in this year's Big 5 to go to 3-0 in conference play. With the 2 losses, which ended a 6-game winning streak, the Eureka boys dropped to 3-2 in conference play. The Del Norte Warriors were also in action on Monday and swept a doubleheader against Fortuna in Crescent City, winning 14-0 and 17-3 to go to 4-0 in the Big 5. In Big 5 softball, the race for this year's championship is shaping up to be one of the most intriguing and exciting in several years. After the opening week and a half of conference play, there are no undefeated teams and 4 of the 5 schools have 2 or 3 wins each. On Monday, the Panthers and Eureka Loggers split an entertaining and competitive doubleheader at McKinleyville High School. The Loggers took the opener 12-7, but the McKinleyville girls responded with a 19-14 victory in a high-scoring game too. Also on Monday, the Fortuna girls got their title hopes back on track in Crescent City after a shaky start to conference play that saw them drop games against both Eureka and McKinleyville. The Huskies swept their doubleheader against Del Norte, winning 4-1 and 4-0. McKinleyville is now 2-1 in conference play and leads the standings by percentage points, with Eureka and Fortuna both 3-2 and tied for second, followed by Del Norte at 2-2 and Arcata at 0-3. In local college baseball, it was another tough week for College of the Redwoods. The CR men travelled to Shasta for a doubleheader and lost both games 12-2 and 4-3. With the 2 losses, the Corsairs dropped to 2-19 in the Golden Valley Conference and 4-30 overall. The College of the Redwoods softball team was also in action this week, hosting Lassen in a doubleheader on Tuesday and losing both games 6-3 and 4-1. With the 2 losses, the CR women dropped to 2-10 in conference and 9-18-1 overall. The Cal Poly Humboldt softball team was also in action last weekend, playing 2 games against Cal State San Bernardino and having 2 more cancelled due to the weather. The Jacks split, losing Game 1 7-4 and rebounding to take Game 2 7-5. With the split, the Humboldt women are now 10-8 in conference and 19-20 overall. Switching gears, 3 HDNL MVPs committed to college programs this week. Arcata seniors and twin sisters Tay and May Wolfert, who led the Tigers to back-to-back Big 5 championships in basketball the last 2 years, as well as a Dick Nicolai tournament championship this year, will continue their playing careers at Sierra College after graduation. St. Bernard's multi-sports senior Tyler Heinrichs also signed his letter of intent this week, committing to play football for Simpson University in Reading beginning this coming fall. After leading the Crusaders to a second Big Four title in 3 years this past fall, Heinrichs was named co-MVP of the conference. Heinrichs, who will kick for the Redhawks, was also an all-league selection in both basketball and baseball during his time at St. Bernard's. And rounding out another busy week in local sports, the Eureka and Arcata High School swim teams will host meets on back-to-back weekends at Cal Poly Humboldt. The first of the 2 meets will be held on Saturday afternoon, beginning at 3 p.m., and will also feature a team from Del Norte, which is competing in the pool for the first time this spring. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for this weekend's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters, Elise Cox, Ray Hamill, and Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. If you have story tips, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. I'd also like to remind folks, before the end of our broadcast, that our spring membership drive is April 13th to the 22nd. Please click the green donate button on kmud.org or call 707-923-3911. Your donations help keep our local news on the air. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.